You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 156. I am your host, Matt Alliance, and in this week's episode, we'll discuss some old meatballs, talk about the potential of Chris Antonetti interviewing with the Mets and others, talk about Francisco Lindor's potential to be traded, we'll give our own quick little off-season plans as we are the Indians GM, and of course, we'll answer your questions. Joining me for all that more is another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. I screwed that up really bad.
Merritt, fine.
How's it going?
Fine.
I always say that part too fast anyway, and that time I just fucked it. I'm going to leave it in. I'm not going to restart the whole thing over that.
Of course not. No, I mean, I'm Mr. Nestor, or whatever the hell you just said. That's what I'm known as. So I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Some things happen, baseball things, bigger things that weren't baseball things, I think, but
unimportant.
Yeah, at least we got, unimportant side things that happen in the world. But the Indian stuff all sucks right now because, I mean, of course, we know what's coming.
Mostly trash.
The fact that mostly tread, yeah. That's a good way to put it, is mostly dread. But you know what isn't dreadful, Merritt?
What's that?
See, I can't press the button until you answer me. It doesn't work.
What's that, Matt?
Meatballs.
Meatballs, Merritt.
Oh, all right.
It's Meatballs, our section where we talk about very specific things, things we like to look into. We're doing old-timey meatballs now.
So what does that mean?
Nobody knows, Merritt. It's a meatball you're serving up over the plate. A meatball of knowledge.
Who came up with this idea? Certainly not me.
I actually have one this week.
Me. Okay.
Last week, I didn't get into the old-timey meatballs. I didn't get one time. But I got one I like this week. So actually, I found this because I'm writing something about Indians Gold Glove winners just because it's award season. And I actually found this guy named Vic Power, I think. It's just singular. But is he known? I thought he was a pretty unknown player. But I know he won a bunch of gold gloves. He was a first baseman.
I know who he is because I have brain worms. Okay. And I spent a lot of time on Baseball Reference. Don't mind me.
But he's one of those guys. He's almost like he's a very short duration Sam McDowell, that he was very good for a very short period of time. He won, I think, 7 gold gloves in a row. His first was when they first introduced the gold glove, and he won a bunch for the Indians. But he wasn't that fantastic of a player. He's just he was obviously good on defense for what they had to measure it back then. He was below average hitter. He had some average, but he just didn't walk a whole lot, didn't hit for a lot of power, didn't steal a lot. But he was the last player since 1927 to steal homes twice in the same game, which I thought was cool. He did it in 1958 against the Tigers, which, looking on Baseball Reference, it's when they have their old terrified tiger-looking logo. So it's just the battle of the worst logos ever, because it's that and then the Chief Wahoo. But yeah, this game, he had 3 stolen bases all season. 2 of them came in this one game that the Indians won. He just didn't steal a whole lot of bases. The whole thing was that he was just good at, in this one game, he stole, I think, another one home at one point, but he was just good at knowing when to run against this Tigers pitching, and he did it twice. He did it once in the 8th inning, and then once actually extra innings. It was bases loaded. Who was it up to bat? I feel like it was a big name, because that's why, I think it was, no, somebody got walked. Larry Doby got walked, and I think Rocky Colavito was up. So, I mean, it's a game with a bunch of names, and just the balls of Vic Powers to come up. Bases loaded, 2 outs, bottom of the 10th, and it's tied, and he steals home, and they win the game. I thought that was really cool. So that was the second stolen home of the game. And he's the last one to do it. He did it in 1958, and the only other one since 1927. So doesn't happen often. He did it twice. And he's not even a fast player, which kind of adds to the coolness of it. The fact that he's not like a Mookie Betts or whatever. He just stole home twice in the same game and won a game. I don't know. I just thought it was cool because he's not really a speed guy. And I don't know what would happen if he tried it in the modern day. I just think nobody would try with the bases loaded. And at that point, I mean, they load, it's all in the same pitcher, too. So there's no pitching chains in that inning because, I mean, it's 1958. They don't do that very often. I mean, the guy was obviously not pitching well, and he had to intentionally walk Larry Doby, and then he was facing Rocky Colavito, who I believe this is one of his first 2 years when he was actually good before they traded him. But that's my meatball, that it was the balls on Vic Power.
You know, it is amazing, just before I get into mine, just how we think of relief pitching and the structure that it is within the game as being this thing that's always been there. And I'm looking at stats and stuff of old-timey pitchers, and they did some relief pitching back then, but you'll have guys who started 350 games and they pitched 180 complete games or something like that. So it's interesting just how new in the scheme of baseball relief pitching is. As you mentioned with your meatball, they were not going to be pulling out that starter because they just didn't do right, that. Yeah. I mean, why would you do that? He's the starting pitcher.
That was a reliever, but it was, I mean, they weren't exactly burning through relievers in that game. It was a 10th inning. They were going to make him work through it. He was already one inning in.
So I wanted to see what the greatest individual performance by an Indians player was ever. And I decided to use one of your favorite statistics. What is it again? WPA, win probability added, which is a fun statistic. You know, it's how you can, it's basically a way to see how an individual or other impacted the winning. So I used my old friend Baseball Reference to find the find that sorted by win probably added. I was just going through this list, by the way. Number 17 all time with a win probably added of 0.864. So if he'd added one, is adding an entire win, was that Jason Giambi home run that he hit against the White Sox back in 2013. I thought that was pretty neat. Show up, hit a home run, go home. Pretty nice afternoon. But no, the greatest individual performance by win probably added was Mel Hall. That's right, Mel Hall in 1984. He had actually been traded to the Indians a couple weeks prior to that. This immediately makes you feel like you made a genius trade because he went 3-for-5, including a walk-off home run that drove in three. He also drove another two with a double. But it's funny to see where, you know, an event can come from because his first three at-bats were a single, a strikeout, and like a pop and a pop out. So he's going into a normal game, and then it goes in extra innings. He hits a grand slam or hits a 3-run home run, helps him win. A win probably added of 1.206. So not only did he help them win one game, but he gave them 20% of a second win. So count that, and there you go.
Now, was that his first game as an Indian, or just close to it?
No, it was just one of his first games as an Indian. I'll look deeper. Give me a moment, and I'll tell you when this happened. 1984. I'm delving deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. It would be neat if it was his first game as an Indian.
I know. So say he pinch hit that game, so that would have been even crazier if he just.
It was his fourth game as an Indian. No, I'm sorry. That's down here somewhere. I don't know. Like fifth or sixth or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But that's cool, yeah. I love WPA because they can find cool stuff like that. It's more than just, yeah. Because then it's more than just he hit a home run. It's he hit a home run and it had this kind of context to it. It's always, I always have to feel like I have to add the caveat to it that it's not like predictive, but the fact that he added that much win probability with one swing is really cool, especially because if he was just traded to the Indians, it's always neat.
That's what it was. Yeah. So it was five games after he was traded to the Indians.
Cool. Yeah. I can't remember if there's an Indians player recently that, it seems like they all are bad when they come here first. Like Franmil Reyes had to get comfortable. Obviously, we know Josh Naylor had to get comfortable and just exploded in the playoffs. I mean, who was the last one? Josh Donaldson, just because he was injured, he sucked when he came over. I mean, Cal Quantrill was good, but he was a pitcher. I can't think of a position player that's come over here and been good right away. Bringing us back into the less meaty, more saucy modern day baseball is less. I guess maybe it's more exciting than 1984 Indians probably, but.
They were a bad team, man. They stunk, just to be clear here.
I mean, they made a movie about how bad they were for a long period of time. So, but yeah, the current Indians, there's rumors that are not great. I mean, obviously, I'm just going to combine these into two talking points, basically, is the fact that Lindor is going to be traded by opening day, most likely. Bob Nightingale reported it. J.P. Morosi and others confirmed it. I mean, it's not a surprise. It's not like a new thing. We know he's going to be traded eventually, and the longer they wait, the less he's going to be worth. But they're basically just waiting just to get more suitors. I saw one suggestion that they're just waiting for the Mets to basically assemble a front office, which makes sense because they got, I think we talked about this last week, they got Steve Cohen, who's just going to be shooting money all over the place because he didn't lose any last year. He just wants to win. I mean, he's obviously one you want in the conversation. If you're going to be trading Lindor, you don't want to trade him before that, but there's nobody there. They cleaned house. They traded. They didn't trade. They got rid of Brody Van Wagenen and everybody that worked under him. And then I saw Buster Olney suggested that the Mets should ask the Indians to talk to Chris Antonetti, which, good Lord, please no. Just cut off all his phone lines. Don't let him talk to anybody. I think I saw somebody else mention the Angels should. So it's getting to the point where it's people think it should be like Andrew Freeman, where he goes from the Rays, where he has no money, to the Dodgers, and he has infinite money and wins all these pennants and a World Series eventually. Because I don't doubt that would happen. If you give Chris Antonetti unlimited money, he's going to be great, because I think this Indians team would be absolutely screwed without him where they are now. We've always talked about you have to separate the disdain for ownership in the front office, because it's the ownership that gives them this small budget and Chris Antonetti and I'm blanking on his name, the actual GM. Yeah, there you go. Turn off. It's those two that are making it work and still getting at least regular winning season teams. But if Chris Anthony's sick of it and the Indians say that he can talk to other teams, maybe he does, and maybe he wants the job at the Mets. And then I think it'd be extra hilarious if that happens, and then the Indians trade Lindor to the Mets. He just goes back over with Chris Anthony. Yeah, it's a lot of Mets rumors now because those are the two big ones. I think the other one is Lindor potentially could go to, like, Toronto was one I saw that was kind of interesting. I don't know about the prospects a whole lot, but I would love that to get Bo Bichette back, but I don't think that would happen. But they have a whole bunch of young prospects. They also have Mark Shapiro, who was here when the Indians drafted Francisco Lindor, and he loves his prospects. That's the only thing. I don't know if he would trade any to get Lindor, but the Blue Jays look like another spender. But there isn't a ton of places for Lindor to go this offseason. I think we're going to look back and think they sort of blew it by not doing it last season, but I can't fault them. I can't pretend like I wanted them to, but yeah. So what are your thoughts on it? It's all rumors of Indians leaving. It's free agency technically, but nobody's coming in. It's all Lindor going to get traded. Chris Anthony might be talking to people, but it's out there.
Well, I'm just thinking too about, you know, imagine if the Indians had given Chris Antonetti $200 million in payroll every year over the last 8 years or whatever. Just the team they'd have. Like, they would have kept around guys who were good and stuff like that. They probably wouldn't have spent as much time trying to get Jason Kipnis to work as a player as long as they did, because he just was there. Also, the Lindor thing, I don't know. I mean, it's just the places that have all the good prospects have a shortstop, which is frustrating. The Dodgers aren't going to want him. Did the Red Sox have good prospects? I mean, they're trying to rebuild. Maybe the Yankees. The Yankees make sense to me. And the Mets thing obviously makes the most sense to me as well. But I was talking about that with my dad, too. It's just they need to make a splash to the Mets, you know, now that they have their shiny new owner. And this would be a great way to be real for a new owner to be very, you know, active and kind of pulling like a 1980s George Steinbrenner style of thing where he's just demanding moves and, you know, things of that nature, being a very bossy type of a boss. I mean, honestly, Matt, I just hate the idea of them trading Francisco Lindor, but I would hope, again, that it's a comeback, it's a return that's not just another, like, a Clevenger trade. I'd like for them to get something. I don't know what that looks like. Someone was, like, just joking around, tweeting about, like, them trading him to the Yankees for Giancarlo Stanton and then having the Yankees, like, eat, like, 85% of his payroll. And I was like, I hate that idea. That. I mean, but do I hate that idea? I hate that idea.
I mean, yeah. I mean, even if you liked it, it's not something they usually do. I don't think it's not.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, like, my hope is that they got their kind of, you know, stock the farm system move out of their system with the Clevenger deal, and so this will be one they might be able to pull in, like, a, you know, another Reyes type of a move. Which, I mean, as far as quality is concerned, Francisco Lindor should pull a king's ransom. I mean, of all the trades they've made the last however many years, you know, for pitching mostly and stuff like that, this is the move that should return something that looks like a superstar down the line. You know, like they should have, like with Corey Kluber when they were talking, they'd be going to get someone like Alex Verdugo. That is the type of player I'd like to see come back. Do the Braves have a good farm system? I don't even know. I don't even think it's all that good. So. And they're not going to get Ozzie Albies, like, so I don't know.
Yeah, because that's the hard
all
part.
All I hate it. And I think the if they're going to go anywhere,
players for players, you don't want to get a bunch of prospects.
Well, that's. I mean, I wouldn't mind the Mets either. I guess that's a fine choice for me. So because I like the Mets.
And if they're going to trade Carlos Carrasco too, I also don't hate packaging the two of them up and getting like a better.
You can get a farm system for the
major leaguer. I know. Like, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, you can get because you can say Lindor is just a year if you can't convince him to stay, but Carrasco you at least got for a couple more years, and he's super cheap for what he is. And I feel like you could get the major league player and also get a couple decent prospects out of that. Like, maybe you can pry away Bo Bichette with that and a little more, and also something smaller down the line. But I don't know. It's hard. You got to find a team who thinks they can get him long term, I think, would improve your value. But also, the team that's trading for him is not going to say that. They're going to be saying, oh, we only got him for a year. We can't possibly sign him. So we're going to give you these prospects. But,
like, yeah, I mean, whatever. It's a whole year. The fact of the matter is, it's not going to be 60 games. It's going to be 162, and he's going to be a six-win player. So, I don't know. Maybe some other team will make a stupid move. Maybe they could trade him to the Mariners. The Mariners must have some good prospects, right? Maybe the
Kelenic from him. There we go. They want to trade him.
Yeah, there. Yeah, that kid. Yeah, exactly. And then you could trade him back to the Mets for a king's ransom. Just make a whole little system going there, because we all know Mets fans want that Kelenic kid back. So yeah, I love this idea. I'm currently looking through the Braves farm system, And I don't know if they want a toolsy outfielder. Matt, a toolsy outfielder. What do you think?
Ooh, the Indians love those. Wait, can he hit or not at all?
Well, he has a rangy frame to him. He looks like as though he could really fill in this frame over time. And he's a switch hitter, too. So, that's perfect. You know, I honestly think this Drew Waters kid, here he is. This is your guy, everyone. Drew Waters is going to headline a trade for Francisco Lindor. And well, he won the batting title in AAA last year, or 2019. So that's something. And again, toolsy. Speed is a plus. Ooh, I like this. Many of his doubles will turn into home runs as he matures. Ooh, I haven't read that before in a prospects breakdown.
Are you basically saying you want the Indians to be like, what was that, the early 2010s, Al Davis just signing everybody with speed and hoping for the best? I mean, that's what it seems like they're going for if they do that. Because you got Bradley Zimmer, yep. You got, I guess, Oscar Mercado's fast. They got rid of Greg Allen, so that doesn't work. But I'd like to see a team do that and just say screw it and get all speed, nothing else. Why not? Yeah. On the Mets and Steve Cohen, if one thing that maybe proves I wouldn't be a good GM is if I was him, I think I would just wait and see like any Yankees rumor, just the first one you see, if it's a big player, if it's like JT Romero or whoever, I'm going to just go after that guy and pay him double whatever the Yankees pay him. Just the first guy you can find to prove you can outbid the Yankees this time, even if you don't need him that much. Just do it for the first guy and take away somebody from the Yankees, because I can't think of the last time they did that. They've just taken somebody the Yankees wanted, and I want to see the Mets do that.
Oh, never. You know, yeah. Never. I mean, that didn't happen. Like, the one time that they got a couple splashes there, like in the mid-2000s, right? Outfielder, switch hitter. Yeah. Now, also, oh yeah, Johan Santana is another good example. But like the Yankees already had a stocked rotation, and also they had money back then because the whole Bernie Madoff thing hadn't happened. Why can't I remember his name now? The outfielder who took the called third strike from Adam Wainwright. Oh my God, he played with the Royals. This is gonna kill me. Oh my God, Mets.
I do not remember
2006. This is eating me alive. How can I not remember this man's name? I'm gonna say you're gonna go, oh right, him. Fucking Carlos Beltran. Okay. Carlos Beltran. That was a guy.
Of course.
So, I think them getting someone like Francisco Lindor it's one of those statement moves that it's a team like that would have. I agree with you. Should try and make. Because they need to. Otherwise, they're always going to be the little brother, but now they have more money than the big brother. So they should start splashing it around like a maniac. That man's so rich.
Just swimming. Just be it. Stupid. A few bucks. Yeah. JT Realmuto.
Yeah. Come on, Steve. Just find some money in your couch and throw it at a problem. You'll be fine.
You know what? Screw it. Sign somebody for a bunch of money. Put them on waivers so the Yankees can't claim them
immediately. I love that idea.
And pay his contract.
We didn't actually want him. Yeah. Yankees can't
get him immediately.
Yeah. Or just send him to the minors. Be like, yep. Okay. There we go.
Look the Yankees in the eyes as you do it.
Yep. Guess what I'm doing? I'm sending all. I signed the entire free agent class. I'm trading him to the Yokohama, whatever. I'm trading him to a Japanese baseball team.
There we go. Just the Yankees can't get him. That'd be my goal. That's why I'm not an owner. I guess that's why I'm not an owner, because I wouldn't do that.
This is advertiser content.
We now have 2.3 million people incarcerated in America. Less than 7% of them are incarcerated for violent crime.
That's attorney Jeffrey Robinson, director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. His work inspired the making of Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Who We Are, a chronicle of racism in America, is hosted by Peabody Award-winning journalist Carvel Wallace.
Surely you knew this was a racist country. What does that mean for us today?
The prison population in the United States has increased 700% since 1970. Black Americans make up almost 40% of it.
We didn't get here by accident. I didn't know these things because I hadn't been taught them. And then the question is, why wasn't I taught them? Because this information, it may be hidden, but it's hiding in plain sight.
Who We Are takes a historic look at the disease of racism in America and traces it back to its tipping points. This includes the tipping point we're at today.
I think Americans are watching and thinking and looking at this issue in ways they never have before. And that's why I say this is our last best chance. Because if we don't get it right this time, where America is headed is someplace I don't think anybody wants to go.
How do we make our last best chance count? Listen to Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Now streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
How about we be the GMs, Merritt? Me and you.
Okay.
And, everybody else, obviously, too, because every year of the offseason we post. It's up there now. If you want to go to letsgotribe.com and make a fan post, you can be the GM, do your own moves for the offseason. A couple have already been made, but we're going to say forget that. Do whatever you want. If you are desperate to keep all the option players, if you want. If you want to get rid of Roberto Perez, go for it. If you want to keep Domingo Santana, I don't know why, but go ahead and do that. But yeah, so I did my meatball first. So if you want to go first with your GM plan here, go for it. How would you fix the Indians this season?
Oh, you know what they could use? And this is just an idea I just had just now. Never even thought about it before. They could really use an outfielder that could hit. Now, what do you think of that idea? And let me ask you something. Am I being realistic here? Or am I just being... Am I trying to be realistic, though? Or am I just trying to do moves that I want them to do? Because I have ideas of actual moves they could do.
I think so. I mean, the post itself, I don't think it matters. Because it's an excuse for people to write if they want to. For us, true. I would say do what you think they would do to win. I'm just saying that because that's what I did. I did realistically, like, my most optimistic view of what I think the Indians could realistically do.
Just say they're going to let it ride with Francisco Lindor because they're figuring it. This is their last chance to put anything resembling a winning team together. And I'm also assuming that the team actually wants to win, right? I think that's a key point to all this. It's an assumption in a desire to win, not to mitigate you know, expenses. So I think they re-signed Michael Brantley somehow, honestly. I think they just try and use the old hometown discount and bring him in. I don't know how it would work, to be clear. I don't know how much he would cost. He didn't cost all that much for the Astros in the first place. It was only like a $30 million deal or something, wasn't it? So I would say do that first. That helps lengthen the lineup out precipitously, which makes me happier. Let's see. Pitching's fine. But basically, I think honestly, they just added a bat in the outfield and re-signed, the second baseman. That's all they had to do. I'm a simple man, Matt. I'm a simple man with simple needs, and that's, I think, all they need to do to win. And will they do it? They won't. But, you know, that's fine.
No,
maybe one of their many toolsy outfielders will actually learn to hit.
Now, who do you bring back for options? Are you bringing back, just giving it to everybody but Domingo Santana, I'm assuming? Or I guess probably not Carlos Santana either?
Santana. Joke's on you. No, I do not bring back... When it comes to options, I think everything they've done is the right move, quite honestly. I love Carlos Santana, but I think we talked about it last week. I think 2019 was found money, and they just need to... They have too many big, slow guys at this point. Like it's a team that needs some versatility, and he's just... you can't have that many first-base/DHs on this team, so...
Yeah, but what you're saying is you need a speedy catcher like JT Realmuto is what they need to do.
What they need is a speedy catcher. Yes, like Roberto Perez, I believe you said. Yes, the fastest man alive. Yeah, that's who. Yeah.
See, I don't hate that plan. It's very nostalgic. It's got Michael Brantley coming back.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a man who can still hit. I mean, he was great this year, honestly. But when you look at his numbers, he was a very effective hitter. He hit 300. I mean, he's been good the last two. He's logged literally an exactly 126 OPS the last 2 years. That would be third best on the Indians, I think. Second or third best on the Indians. Like
something like that, yeah.
You just like the fact of the matter is they just need anything offensively. I know that, I don't know, he's 34. He just got paid $32 million over 2 years. You could probably get him to come back for 10 a year for 2 years. Do they have that money? No, they do not have that.
Absolutely not. All right, so what I'm going to do for mine is I'm going to be... I know I said I'm optimistically Indians, and I promise this is my optimistic view of the Indians, but I'm going to say they trade Lindor for somebody that is not going to be that impactful in the major leagues, which, if that should tell you anything, that's my optimistic view of what they could do. So I'm saying they trade Lindor so he's not in my lineup, but I also don't have to worry about picking a trade partner because it's not going to matter this year. They'll trade him to the Mets, the Blue Jays, somebody for a prospect that won't be impactful right away. Maybe not somebody who... They can call it midseason, but beginning of the season. But that's mine to start. And then I would also obviously I pick up Roberto Perez's option. Brad Hand, I would keep him for $10 million. I still think that was nuts. I get maybe they can
what the hell?
Let him go and then re-sign him for cheaper, but whatever. I just pay him the 10 and not risk it. Carlos Santana, I let go and cry about it a little bit. Domingo Santana, I don't even think about it. Arbitration?
Resign, of course.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, totally. Austin Hedges, I guess bring him back and then just don't keep saying to Leon. Adam Simber, no, don't pay him whenever he wants. Lando DeShields, no. Lindor's obviously gone. Phil Maton, obviously bring him back. I like him. Tyler Naquin, no. he's gone. Nick Whitgren, obviously, yes, he's back. So so Simber, Lindor's not there. DeShields, and did I say Naquin? Yeah, Naquin's back. So just DeShields and Hedges are the two, or DeShields and Simber are the two that I wouldn't bring back through arbitration. So free agency, I think, I actually wrote about this earlier today or yesterday, that I think the first I could see them stretching is for like Tommy La Stella, which isn't exactly a long stretch, but he was he's decent. He's a slap hitter guy. He's not a big homer guy, but he doesn't strike out ever. I think it was since like 2019, nobody struck out less than him, and they seem to like that. That's sort of,
yeah,
it goes against the grain of what's going on right now. Everybody just strikes on hits for power, but maybe you just get La Stella cheap because of that, and then you bring him in. So I think they either do that or they sign like Jerks and Profar to a 1 year, $6 million deal, and also Jonathan Scoop to a one year, $6 million deal. Like they sign those two or Tommy La Stella. Either way, I don't think they spend more than like 12 or 13 million on a straight up contract. And then just offer minor league deals to, I don't know, fucking anybody. Rusty Castillo is a weird one on the Red Sox, who they signed to a huge deal and he couldn't play basically because it would have put him over the luxury tax. So maybe like a change of scenery and let him actually play. He turns out to be something resembling what they thought he was. Yeah, Gerard Dyson. Hit. Yeah. Yeah. That could be like a home run hit there. But Gerard Dyson, whatever. Ryan Braun, sure. It's just old guys they bring in just to try it out. Like you said, Ryan Braun, it's depressing, but it's there. So, yeah, I think they go for La Stella over Cesar Hernandez, which I think is an upgrade. And they have, as much as I love Hernandez being here, but La Stella and then some random guys. I think Nolan Jones comes up after the Super 2 deadline, which is very unfortunate. And also maybe like Jason Kipnis on a minor league deal, something like that, if he sticks around, because he was pretty good last year. And he's obviously the veteran guy that they're going to lose when Lindor is gone. So maybe they're getting him cheap. But all of my options are very, very cheap, because I think that's what they're going to do. They're still going to get into the playoffs probably, and then I don't know how that's going to go. But they're going to be in there. And they're going to be, I also don't trade any of the pitchers for my offseason plan. I think they'll probably trade Carlos Carrasco, but if I was in charge, realistically, I don't think I would. I would keep that intact.
No, at this point, we've been talking for years now about them moving pitchers to get things. I think they've done that. I don't think they have enough pitching at this point where they have the glut that they did 2 or 3 years ago to deal from that point. I just, as you go through all those names, it's very irritating, right? How this is a, because of what happened, because of the type of season that normally a team like the Indians would be able to just feast, because there's so many, honestly, just players that aren't going to get paid, but because they're one of the teams that can't pay anyone, that's why it's happening. So it's like they're trapped in hell, is how I would phrase it.
Basically, yeah. What do you think it'd be different this offseason if it wasn't for, like, if this was a regular offseason where the Indians are still pretty cheap, but is there a lot of these players, or does it just seem like there's a lot because...
No, I think there's just a lot because... Yeah, no one wants to spend them. Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's that middle class of player. You know what I mean? All the guys you mentioned, the guys who make between $6 and $17 million a year. You know, guys who are out of arbitration, aren't signing 7 and 8 year mega deals. Guys who fill out the rest of a roster and are useful, but just the ones who end up, you know, at the end of their career, they've played for 9 teams because there's someone who is too expensive to keep around for too long, but you can get them for a low risk 1 or 2 year deal like that. And it's just, there's just more of those because those are the players that people don't want to pay, right? Like there's a little more risk there, I guess. And why pay that guy who, you know, like someone like La Stella, right? Who he's projected in 2021 to put up a 269, 345, 430 line. Like, why pay the 32-year-old to do that, pay him whatever, $8 million, when you could probably get near that production for $800,000? You know what I mean? So, no, I think that's what it is. We're going to see more and more of those guys. And then hopefully, one would hope that they like be able to find some money to afford them on the cheap. But that's why a team like the Mets, all they really need is relief pitching.
Anyway, I think it'd be cool if somebody like Jock Peterson fell to them too. He was terrible in the regular season, but like really came up in the postseason. He's not a terrible option. I think if
platoon bat, regular... I mean, you know, that's the thing. They have guys that they can platoon together with him to create another amalgam monster. One of our favorite things about being Indians fans is watching two men become platoons. One. You know, everyone loves a nice platoon.
Why have one great outfielder when you can have two average ones that sort of maybe occasionally turn?
Hey, you know, you combine a couple years ago they did that, and they had like Miguel Cabrera as a right fielder or something like that, like offensively, because it's just it was. I can't remember who it was on the top of my head, but it's just
Brandon Guy or Lonnie Chisenhall was the peak.
That was the absolute peak, yeah. Or Ryan Rayburn and Chisenhall, maybe.
Yeah, they were good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rayburn was also every other year, too, which was a weird thing for him.
Yeah.
Remember that? He was awful 1 year and great the other year. That seems like so long ago that Ryan Rayburn was here. Holy cow.
Dude, I was researching for my meatball today, and I was just clicking through, and I ended up looking at Kelly Shopuck for a few minutes. And, like, I might still talk about this, but he just had that 1 year where he tricked us into thinking that they'd be fine replacing him after they traded Victor Martinez. He was just dog shit.
Those were not fun years.
Take a trip through the through any of those, you know, the teams, maybe not even of my youth, but, like, of, like, the early to mid-2000s, just, like, those are some names right there, man.
I mean, your formative adult years,
basically. Yeah, you know, there's a reason why Ellis Burks is the name that I name check in my pinned tweet, because I'm just like, you know, I don't know. He was hilarious. What a guy. But to your point, that was a pretty realistic, I'll be honest with you, almost optimistic free agency setup that you just put together there. Mine,
I mean, it's not a ton of money. It's just a lot of players, I guess. But
yeah, and that's the thing, you know. The way I was looking at it was just like they make the moves, all the moves they made. I see where you're coming from with the hand thing, but I thought he was just smoke and mirrors this year, and we were just waiting for the shoe to drop every time he came out. I know I wrote about him, and I thought that he was pretty, and, you know, the numbers say he was effective, but God damn it was worrisome watching him pitch.
And that's every closer, though, right? To a certain extent. I feel like he recovered it compared to where he was at the beginning end of last year.
But, like, after sitting through the playoffs and where everyone is throwing 99 miles an hour, it seems like, and then they're just rolling out this guy who just chucks 91 mile an hour, like, shitters up there, and it's just garbage.
Yeah, and this is not at all a way to evaluate anything, but when Brad Hinn came up in the last game of the wild card, it did not feel at all like, I mean, the Indians had a lead. They could close out and won. I did not for a second feel like they were going to win that game.
No,
I guess that was more about just how the series went, I guess, more than Brad Hinn himself. But there was not even a moment when they got the hits. I was like, yeah, that's what I expected to happen.
But yeah, I think outside of the hand thing, they made the right moves when it came to keeping guys around. Everyone you said when it came to the arbitration, yeah, just Adam Simber has no role anymore because you have to get through three pitchers and he just can't get lefties Which out sucks, to save his
he's
life.
So goofy.
I can only think that they're going to keep him around because he might be cheap because he was so shitty. But I don't know. I mean, this is his first year of arbitration, I guess. Yeah, it would just be the first year. So it might be, goddamn, dude, if they cut their payroll down to like $30 million.
I mean, that's a very, if they trade Carrasco and Lindor and don't sign anybody, that's a real option. Which
I know, it blows my mind. I get it. Because how much is Jose Ramirez is making? $5 million a year.
It's ridiculous, yeah. His agent screwed that one up.
I mean, you know, how many times have we worked ourselves into excitement over a Cesar Hernandez deal? Which, again, I thought he was great this year. I really thought that was a breath of fresh air. By the way, Adam Simber had ridiculous reverse splits this year. 901 OPS against righties and 414 against lefties. So who the hell knows what's going on there?
Yeah, there's not even anything like statistically about Cesar Hernandez's year that was outstanding. I feel like such an old baseball writer because it's like he just did things the right way. He was consistent. Well, was fun about him.
He was nice to watch. he I've was said a pleasant so boy. Jason Kipnis was awful to watch defensively. It was just so herky. It was effective, but it just wasn't nice to look at. Whereas there's a certain fluidity to someone who I assume, I mean, we know Jason Kipnis was moved from the outfield and all that stuff, so he was a converted second baseman. But Cesar Hernandez had the look of someone who'd been playing second base since he was like two. And
yeah, I mean, seeing him, Lindor, and Ramirez is crazy at the same infield. I mean, the fact they're all switch hitters too was nice. We're not going to see them like that as good for a long time. But so every Monday, we ask everybody on Twitter, Facebook, and the Discord to send us your questions, what you want us to answer. We'll take a couple this week. Our first one, I thought this was a neat little thought exercise we can do, @base_get on Twitter. He asks, if you could implement a 5-year plan after the World Series in 2016, how far away from that have the Indians gone? I feel like we talked about this several years ago at this point. We've been doing this podcast for a while, that they, I mean, we had a plan sort of. It was, I was okay with this sort of rolling rebuild. You never completely tank. You always sort of are decent winners, but I always imagine them putting money back into it to fill in the holes like they did in 2017 when they signed Edmund Encarnacion. And that was the peak of how I'd want this team to be run. Like, you have 80% of a team there. You maybe have a couple positions that aren't great, but you have one you can fill in with a free agent and you just keep rolling with it. You trade your guys when they're almost about to leave. You don't overspend, but you can still win and just fix what you need to, and you turn into the 2017 Indians who win a bazillion games. But I think they're pretty far off of it now. They just abandoned the second half of that, which is spending the little tiny bit of extra money. They've just gone fully into skirting the edges, and they don't bother. You don't have to go all in to push yourself over the edge, but they're not even like putting a toe over there.
I just, it's something I've written about over and over and over too, you know, where we've, you know, it's important to, for a team like the Indians, obviously, to pinch pennies just because they don't have the income streams that other teams do, whether it's the merchandising and all that crap, TV deals, and obviously butts in seats. But like, I just, every offseason that a player that teams, fans love, who isn't all that expensive, I'm literally talking about Michael Brantley here, is on the, you know, he's on the way out. Do people not understand that kind of soft cost? You know what I mean? Like, I think if they had re-signed players like Michael Brantley, would have continued to, because they've just been sitting on the, like, for years now. Just, there's this lurking cloud over them that I think poisons any 5-year plans. They're like the one you just described, of them kind of plowing money back in because they have this like artificial ceiling on top of them because the fans don't trust them to spend money. And if they don't spend the money, then the fans won't come, and the fans won't come, they don't have any money. And it's this recursive loop down to hell, even though they spent the money, but then I don't know. This is a long way of me saying, yes, they got away from the 5-year plan, whatever that might've been. It's still working to a degree. I think that maybe they should have moved some pitchers a little quicker as far as trading them. I don't know who that would have been at any given time. Just because, like, some of these guys peaked later than other guys did. So,
I mean, Kluber, right? That's a good
Kluber. Yeah,
we would have dragged him like crazy. But if they could have got like Alex Verdugo or Cody Bellinger or somebody crazy for him a year or two earlier,
honestly, even Bauer, I thought would have been a smart move. I mean, I figured that they saw what they had in. I know he came out of nowhere, but they had to have seen what they had in. Bieber. Yeah. I just couldn't remember.
And I mean, they knew he was going to be good for a couple of years, too. I don't think he came quite out of nowhere, but.
And then also two things like you can't just, I think if there's one move that would have pissed people off, but would have really injected a ton of talent into the farm system that would have really supercharged things, it would have been moving Bauer the year after that season where he was a 2 whatever. Yeah, the one where he was the best pitcher on the team in 2018. 2018, move him after that year. You could have gotten a king's ransom from who gives a shit who, you know, the anyone, literally anyone. Like they would have just cleaned the hell up. So,
so real quick, we'll finish with Scott of the Borough on Discord. He wants to know, how can I convince my boomer dad that Fernando Reyes is good? I like this one. How do you, it seems weird because this seems backwards. It seems like this is a guy that maybe, I don't know. It seems like Fernando Reyes is a guy that old school guys would like just because he's a huge. No, you know what? I'm going to reverse that. I think he's a guy, he's a new age guy, because the old guys are always like the average, the batting average guys who hit the ball the right way. They hit it the other way, and Franmil just hits the big dongers, which maybe doesn't get to him. But how do you sell that to somebody who's a very old school baseball fan?
I mean, there's, you point to things like the fact that the, you know, go look at the strikeout rates of the team that just lost the World Series, right? And I guess you can point back to that and go, well, yeah, they lost the World Series, but they got there, you know? I mean, the Rays strike out a shitload. So does Fernando Reyes. He's also walking more than he did a year ago, and he hits the ball a quarter mile. Like, I don't know. What do you want out of a baseball player? If someone's like, I don't like Reyes, what do you want then? Mike Trout? We all want Mike Trout. Everyone's flawed except Mike Trout. Shit. He's, you know, young too. So I don't know. It's a hard thing. It seems hard to have to sell someone like that. But like you said, his batting average is not that high. He still walks at an okay rate, but. Don't we just want huge guys to hit the ball very hard, you know?
I think so. It's hard to sell baseball players, I think, more than other sports, because football players are really easy, obviously, like the bigger linemen, like the receivers that you can show highlights to. But how many times can you show Fernando Reyes hitting a ball 1,000 feet before they just
stop? Plus, you know what? He also gets a lot of sac flies. He moves guys. Yeah. He moves the runner a lot.
There you go. That might actually be a good – that's a plus.
I will say this. He does move the runner at a decent clip. I wonder if I can actually find that stat here. I never remember where that one is here in the.
He definitely does though, because he comes up and he just, if he's not going to hit home run, he's going to hit it sky high in 30,000 feet.
Yeah, he has five sack flies this year. I don't know where that ranks in terms of most in baseball or anything like that, but
yeah, and I think he's a good clubhouse guy too. That's another one. That's like a classic.
Him. He's friendly.
Yeah.
Again, he's gigantic. That's always fun. situational. Let's see. Pinch hitting, hits, sack hits, 0 grand double play, productive outs. He had a productive out rate of 33% this year. He had 27 opportunities to have a productive out and produced 9. The MLB average is 26.7%. So he produces, he moves people over to productive. He's more productive than your average player when it comes to moving guys over and getting guys in from home, things like that. I mean, if you want small ball, the big man does it right. And if you want
big ball, he does it good.
He does also that good, yeah. So
he's got all the balls. He's really good.
I would say that. I mean, yeah, he doesn't play in the field. So, and I'll say this. You know, my dad's an old school type as well. He's always hated the DH. At first, he liked it because it meant a place for all his favorite old guys to play. But then he realized down the line, you're going to have young guys who only know how to DH. So, you know.
And then you have young guys who used to – or you have old guys that used to be the young guys. They're not your old guys anymore. And then it doesn't even matter anymore.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, if he just hates the DH, then too bad. It's going to be universal forever probably. So, eat it, old man.
that's our – tell him to eat it. That's how we'll fix it, Scott.
Kiss my grits.
That's going to do it for this week, Merritt. It was – I'll let it all out, but there was some technical fun in the middle there. I thought this was going to be a fun, quick little edit, but
nope.
Our internet decided to
butchery,
die,
baby. And... this is why I don't have to edit the podcast anymore. God, I always hated having to do that shit.
I wonder who does that now, that sucker.
Some clown. Some dumb clown that I laugh at.
Anyway, if you don't follow us on Twitter and Facebook, letsgotribe.com, you can find us everywhere. If you're on the podcast, subscribe, leave us a review. It helps. It all helps people find us. And maybe we'll talk to you next week.
I'll be here.
See ya.